Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And welcome to X Squared Radio. We're glad you're here with us tonight. We're coming to you from deep beneath the earth in western Kentucky. Glad you're here. It's a little bit hot today, about 80 degrees, my AccuWindow forecast says. Just thought we'd let you know that there's a rather nasty flu bug going around in Mexico, Canada, Spain, and the Mideast. Could be making its way here. This bug has the makings of a pandemic. Don't forget, we talked about this. The last time this nation saw a really nasty flu bug, it was responsible for the death rates as high as 50% in some cities. It wasn't the flu bug itself that killed, it was the immune system that killed people in as little as a few hours. You might feel better to know that there is a vaccine out there, but it hasn't been made in more than 75 years. Still, sitting in a refrigerator somewhere. The solar wind tonight, 380 kilometers per second, and the sun is blank today, but we actually had a nice little high-latitude sunspot, clearly from solar cycle 24, 5 days ago, breaking the streak. The sun, however, produced an unexpected burst of activity on April 23rd, when an enormous prominence rose over the northeastern limb and erupted. The complex explosion produced not one, but two coronal mass ejections. Kind of interesting, but it's not heading in our direction. It's only a matter of time, and not much of it now. Better get prepared. A record was set today in New York City, 80.8 degrees. You might start shopping for those high-temperature walking shoes for this summer if you live in that city. Asphalt's liable to be pretty warm. OPEC wants to see oil prices rising to more than $70 a barrel. The oil cartel's Secretary General Abdallah El Badri said Sunday, the price of $50 is not enough to cover investment costs for the future, El Badri told reporters in Algiers. Oil prices jumped above $51 a barrel on Friday as a flagging U.S. dollar and rising stock markets offset concerns about weak demand arising from the global economic downturn. I should let you know that there are two countries besides the United States that are demanding oil. China, of course, has a middle class coming on strong. Several major car companies and large truck companies going at full tilt right now, but there's a wild card out there, India. India wants everything and wants it now. So if you think we're just looking at how many miles we're driving and what we're trying to conserve on, just wait. There is a solution coming soon. Global Green Cars is back. That's right. After an 11-year shutdown caused by Detroit attorneys defeating the electric vehicle mandates in 1998, they are about to bring back the plug-in electric car that set and still holds all the world records. If you're interested in beating the high price of gasoline once and for all, how about dropping them an inquiry at info@ggci-us.com. That's info@ggci gasplug-us.com. Get your plug-and-play vehicle and pay zero for gasoline. Last week, we had a most incredible program with Jose Arguelles and his amazing biographer, Stephanie South, the man who stated the awareness movement to begin in the early 70s, about the year 2012. Looks like he did an amazing job. You're aware, aren't you? If not, then go back and listen to the archive from last week. Subscribe at xsquaredradio.com. Also, if you have children in college, then you are buying lots of textbooks, or at least a few very expensive textbooks. They cost a lot of money until now. Check out Campus Book Rentals and discover the newest and least expensive way to get those textbooks. You rent them. Amazing, huh? I think it is a fantastic way to make a great college education available to everyone. Click on the Campus Book Rentals banner at X Squared Radio. Help us out and help yourself out, too. If you're a college student, pass the word. Textbooks are now for rent, just like those little Redbox movies. We often talk about preparedness here at X Squared Radio. That's why we have NitroPack as one of our favorite affiliates. They have everything from 72-hour kits to full food storage packages. Don't get stuck with a 55-gallon drum of wheat. You can't haul it anywhere if you have to move. So you have time to plan. So make survival the least of your worries, people. Get a hold of NitroPack and pick up for yourself some kind of survival items. Food, clothing, special tools, water filters, things like that. They've got it all. And they've been around for 20 years. They do it better than anybody else. Also, I know you own an inkjet printer. I own a couple of them. And even if you own a laser printer, those consumables get really, really expensive. I sometimes spend $40 down at the local national chain store, if you know what I mean. And I got tired of doing it. So we picked up 123 Inkjets as our affiliate. And we're glad we did, because now what I do is get a hold of 123 Inkjets and I order all my inkjet and printer supplies through them. That's the way to go, people. Free shipping, and every time you buy something from them, you get a chance at winning a free printer. Now, that's cool. So get a hold of 123 Inkjets. Click on the banner at X Squared Radio. Stock your home or office with the best for less while conserving fuel at the same time. Don't go away. First hour of X Squared Radio is about to start. And welcome to X Squared Radio first hour, 3 hour program. So if you're not getting all 3 hours, let us know. We'll get a hold of your affiliate and take care of the rest. For the first hour tonight, we were scheduled to have Mr. Danion Brinkley on the program. Not been able to reach him for this first hour. Our second hour tonight, we have Stefan Utuni coming on the program. He wrote several papers and has a website on the origin of the pyramid and some interesting aspects about it. This should be very interesting. So this first hour, it's just you and me. Next week, I am going to be doing a broadcast, but then the following week, I'm going to be in China. So I probably will not be doing a broadcast from China unless I can get very, very clear internet access, but should be a pretty eventful week. We're going over there to look at three car companies, which will help us bring this electric vehicle to the U.S. And get it built here. The major car companies in this country have had their problems getting their own cars out the door, let alone starting a new electric car program. And some of the foreign car makers have announced that they are going to introduce electric cars, but they just never seem to get around to doing it. Well, gasoline is now in the high 180s, 190s, most of the country, and some places still over $2 a gallon, still biting significantly into the budget. And actually, the price of oil jumping up to well over $100 a barrel, and the price of gasoline taking a huge chunk out of that once disposable dollar that we had, it's probably responsible for most of the financial woes that we have right now. Several months of that eats away at the savings. People have to go to work. They have to go to school. And they did cut their driving down as much as possible. But still, a fuel bill going from $100 a month to $400 a month is not what everyone expects. It's not what they want to spend their money on. And when they're running pretty close and have just a few hundred dollars of disposable income each month, it means that people go out and buy less. And if they buy less, that means that the businesses don't make as much money. If they don't make as much money, they have to start laying people off. If they start laying people off, then those people that are laid off can't buy anything. And the spiral continues. Couple that with the idea and the advent of the minimum wage next phase kicking in as of last fall. And you see a horrible unfunded mandate foisted upon the American people by the federal government as a vote-buying program. And you have businesses faced with the idea that they must bring in unskilled, inexperienced workers for the same money that they're paying workers that have 2 years' experience. And employers are faced with a dilemma. What do I do? I have to hire someone, and I have to pay them the same amount of money as my journeyman gets paid. So the journeyman cook or the journeyman tailor or whatever job you may have that falls in that minimum wage area as you're working your way through college or supplementing your family's income becomes frustrated because he is saying or she is saying, hey, I've been here 2 years. I've got skills. Why am I just be paying minimum wage? And so they ask for a raise. Now, if I'm an employer, I have only one option, and that is to either reduce my headcount or raise my prices. But if you're a national chain store or a franchise, raising prices isn't simple. It's very expensive to raise prices. All new signs, all new advertising, different kinds of campaigns, different budgeting. You can't just change the price of a Big Mac overnight. It's not that easy. And besides, once you break the next dollar level with that burger, it cuts into your sales. Sure, you're making more margin per burger, but you're selling less burgers because people are going to pay $5.50 for a Big Mac like they do in Japan. We're not used to it. We have to be broke into just a little bit at a time. We can't take a dollar jump at a time. Well, that's what the federal government does to us. And this isn't a political show. It's designed to get you thinking about the condition of the earth and the condition of you as you're existing on it. So if you're thinking about the economic meltdown, as people are calling it, as one of the, quote, signs of the times, you're probably right. If you read Volume 2 of the Ark of Millions of Years under the chapter called The Watchers, which was published in 2006, you will see that all of this has already been thought of, written down, planned. Not that we gave a blueprint to the federal government, but everyone saw this coming. Everyone, it seems, except you. Because you didn't put back enough savings to weather it, and so now you're changing jobs, or you've lost your job, or now you're underemployed. In any case, you've had to sell some stuff, and you've had to consider bankruptcy. And all of that has brought fear and woe to your existence. And that's what we need to lead ourselves out of. How do we do that? How do you just get out of $25,000 or $30,000 of credit card debt? How do you look at your job in the same way you looked at it when you were happy the day you got it and you were working and you were making a paycheck and you felt productive? How do you get in the car each day, drive to work, get out of the car in the parking lot, and not want to vomit before you walk in? Well, that's what this program is about. Because at the end of the day, we want you to realize you are source, you are the creator, you are the source of all abundance in your life. And so you must realize that each moment we are nearing a place in the cosmos that many say will turn on switches in the human DNA to perhaps trigger the next human evolution. And we see these changes around us. You see them in you. Things that you are aware of and that you are thinking about now, you weren't thinking about 2 years ago. The dreams that you're having, the yearning that you have to meditate, to quietly contemplate the events of the past week, the progress you've made in your life, the condition of your relationships, the assessment of how much you love others. Those things are being switched on inside of you. God, some people say, the Holy Ghost, others, the Spirit, wafting and changing the very light that illuminates our planet. But the economic earthquakes are occurring just as predicted by the ancients and by various prognosticators of late. Are we going to pull out of it, or are we doomed to going down the whirlpool of poverty? All of us. Well, that's a good question. Some of us think we live in the best of all possible worlds, and others of us fear that's true. And while we're contemplating that, we feel ever powerless to do anything about it. How empowered did you feel when you walked into the voting booth last November? How much different do you feel with this administration than you felt with the last administration? If you've changed jobs in the last 90 days, do you feel differently than you did then? If you've lost your job in the last 90 days, or the company for whom you have worked for so many years has come to you quietly and said, if you ever thought about working at somewhere else, you might want to start putting your resume out there. That's a rather disconcerting thought for most people. In fact, for everyone. And for most of us, we've got the little project in our garage or in the corner of our living room or just behind that page we're paid to work on our laptop. We have another page that we're working on for ourselves, for our own ideas. Those creative juices are flowing because we feel the fountain of abundance inside of us, and we cannot sit by and do it for our employer any longer. It's time to make you the millionaire, and not your boss, who appears to you to do nothing for it. So is there anything we can do to turn the course of mankind? Indeed, what I want you to do is pick up the phone and give us a call. You can call us toll-free. There's a toll-free number right there on your screen. If you're at bbsradio.com and you're listening to the program on Station 2, you've got it right there in front of you. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call toll-free anywhere in the world, 888-228-4494. And if you've got a cell phone with free nights and weekends and you're close to a cell phone tower, and you're on planet, off planet, if you can get to it, you can reach us, 530-776-5144. It's just you and me for about 40 minutes, and then we're going to have Stefan Wutuni come on the program. I'm asking some powerful questions tonight. You may have the answer. I could give it to you, but, you know, maybe we need some interaction here tonight. The bottom line is, can we save this planet? Now, we're talking about, of course, the human race, as arrogant as we are, but also the life that teems around us. Not just the unseen life, the microbes and plankton in the ocean, those things just under the surface of the sea that live in so delicate a chemistry that makes up 5/7 of our planet, but also that life that we can see. The cattle, the birds, the dogs, frogs, all of that other life around us, the teams around us. If you live in the South, you hear it all the time. The very woods around you teem with it. What a dreadful place this planet would be if the nature made no sound at all. And as you look above you, you'll see millions, perhaps billions of gallons of water and huge rivers going through the sky over your head. That, too, relies somewhat upon you and your activities. Can we save this planet? As far as we look in every direction, and believe me, we have probes out there, we have telescopes out there, we're looking, we are looking. There is not another world like this Earth. Very interesting and very rare we are in this corner of the Milky Way galaxy. It's just us and this glob of dirt and iron and water, which just happens to be liquid at exactly the right distance from the sun. It's just us. It's just us and this geometry, this Gaia-ometry, in perfect symmetry, in perfect harmony, making a place where so delicate to being as a human can thrive in the cold blackness of space. Are we as a race marching to war? Or do you sense that those who love peace and the whole event of mortality as a child path to godhood, do you think we outnumber those who love war? Frankly, I can't see anyone loving war. Been a pacifist my whole life. Never struck another human being out of anger in my entire life. Never even been tempted to do so. The pain that I would inflict upon another would be unacceptable for me. And I wonder, though, what makes warriors tick, how they can charge across the frozen tundra with a battle axe in their hands for God and country and tribe, and what could they possibly be thinking? I wonder. And I know you wonder as well. There are tribes around the earth, clerics, shamans, who have had visions about the race of man. What is the future? As they see it, we are headed for war and destruction. World War III, inevitable. Inevitable. Nuclear winters and clouds of ego poured one nation into another nation. Acceptable losses and economic divisions dedicated to surviving with what? Just the leadership of whom, if we have such a terrible war? What visionaries could think of such cataclysmic acts, one man against another? And yet, that war has not happened yet. Some of us, I should say, not some of us, some people publish that we are in the golden age. I personally disagree with that. I think we may have passed out of the iron age and we're passing into the bronze age and we're beginning to shed an inexorable desire to pick up steel and wield it at one another. But if you think about it, those who say we have entered this Bronze Age of the beginning of enlightenment, somewhere around the late 1700s, early 1800s, need to reflect, because the most terrible wars this planet has ever known have been fought since that day. Wars of revolution and independence, wars of civil unrest, which could have completely been avoided. And through only abject ignorance and ego did we plunge into the bloodiest war of our nation's history. And then, as if that wasn't enough, we turned around and plunged into two more wars before we fought the war to end all wars, which didn't end the wars. It only set us up for one more war, and by the time that one was done, two shakings of the ashes, as the Guatemalans call it, two nuclear blasts, an experiment, a big stick, a big man in the world, wiping out hundreds of thousands to show we could, and how terrible it would be to ever do it again. And still, that did not end wars. We fought a Korean War, we fought a Vietnam War, and we're still fighting wars. The vast majority of the technological innovations done by this company, funded by this country, I mean, divided out of our dollars, openly and secretly, have been to create or defend ourselves against weapons. Imagine what a planet we would have if there was no nation dedicating any of their budgets to the building of weapons. What if we were the exploring people you were born to be? What if we realized that this planet has more than enough and to spare for each and every one of us? What if we realized that our procreative abilities must be held in check, not displayed like a virus or a bacteria consuming every bit of food and water in sight? What if we realized that we could live in balance with the planet Earth? What if we remembered that the reason we came here at this time was to be here for an incredible evolution, not only of the body and the DNA that makes it up, but also of the soul, the spirit that embodies this body, that we, in fact, might learn something of a much higher nature, something we could not learn before when our knuckles were dragging the ground, or when we were grubbing for a few berries or a stray rabbit, or worse, even roadkill, to survive. We now have mastered the ability to grow all the food we need. We've mastered the ability to clean water and to sequester trash and pollution. And if we would put enough money into it, if we would put enough emphasis on it, and not fill our landfills with plastic, and not dig up our planet and shovel it into our gas tanks and burn it, that maybe we could live in harmony with this planet and evolve. We're here now at this very special time, a time when we can make this world into anything we want. We can fly around it. We can sail around it. We can even float around it in space. Do you realize that we have the capability of making this planet able to sustain all the life that's on it without a single drop of pollution? Do you realize that? Do you realize that we can live in harmony with all the life in the sea and in the sky? That we could change this world into a complete Garden of Eden if we would just lay down our weapons and do so? Many of us have read about a savior and about saviors in the last day. Do you think there's a way each of us can serve in this capacity in some respect? You think there's a way that we can look for the good in each one of us and try to bring it out? I think so. I think so. Fear is one of those little understood energies that permeates our society. Oh, it's little understood, but it's very, very powerful. If you don't believe me, walk down the wrong city street sometime. If you're not afraid, they are. Some way, somehow, we have to radiate the love that dispels this fear. We have to turn on the light that makes the darkness flee for the shadows, and then we have to illuminate the shadows. My friends, it does not take weapons. It takes awareness. It takes communication and awareness. No one is going to fight a war when their bellies are full and they have a clean glass of water to drink. Do you understand this? We cling to life and seem to value it beyond measure, and yet we see so many people cursing their existences. Some say we live in marvelous times, while others wish God would swoop down and take them away from all the misery they see. There are people sitting on their porches waiting for it all to end, too afraid to die, and too sad to lift a finger to help themselves. It is time, finally. Here we are in the year 2009, and it is time. Come off the porch, lay down your weapons, there is plenty to do. Now, let's talk about what we got to do. Hang on one moment while I pour some water down my throat. I know you were doing the same as I was doing. That was a subliminal message to take a drink. Okay. What is it that we have to do? Give us our task list. Here it is. Sunday, April 26th, 2009. Our task list, as grass begins to push through the frozen tundra of the north countries, north states of our nation, and we get ready for storm seasons in the Midwest, and the Gulf of Mexico warms up and is wonderful and beautiful to scuba dive in. What do we do? What is our task? Task number one, first and greatest commandment. We have to learn and figure out how to love ourselves. If you stand there and look at the mirror at yourself and say, I don't like you, then we have a good place to start, my friend. If you stand in the mirror and you like what you see, you've got a leg up on it, so to speak. You're ready to mount up and start riding the horse. This is a self-help program, but there are sources for you. If you have trouble realizing that this is the order of work that needs to be done, to look out at the world and say, oh my gosh, what can I do to fix this? You would be surprised how little you have to do to fix it. Because you as an individual don't think you have much power. But you, John Q. Public, have the most power of any force in the world. It's true. You have to act collectively. But when you act collectively, you have immense power. You would be surprised what the picture of alternative energy would be if each one of you would stop relying on the federal government to take care of everything for us. And you would take it upon yourselves to do a little bit of research and find a company that you like. Find a technology that you think would make a difference. Look at the integrity of the leadership. And I've got to tell you, there are some pretty scandalous figures out there taking advantage of this right now. It doesn't take long. If you look in the alternative energy business, you're going to find them. They're at every convention, just about. But one of the most scurrilous characters out there will go unnamed, but runs a company that purports to build electric vehicles. And although it may, and I use that word loosely, may have actually built an electric vehicle from time to time, they're very public and they're very open, and they seem to jump on any wave and bandwagon that looks like it might make their stock go up. And I realize that that description could fit just about any company, but I'll put it this way. They're going around zapping states and individuals, anyone who can stop and fog a mirror and open their wallet. So I need you to look at the integrity of the people that are running the business. And if all those things are right, then you need to begin taxing yourself, a voluntary energy tax. Find a company and send them some money each month, even if it's $5. By my estimation, by the time this program runs, tonight's program, April 26, 2009, by the time everyone listens to it, well over 5 million people will have heard it. 5 million people with $5 each is $25 million a month. That's a lot more than the federal government is ever going to put into the field of alternative energy. Far more. So if you are able to send that amount of money to a company that has the wherewithal and the integrity to put forth the kind of technology that would get us off of petroleum and get us driving electric vehicles that make sense, you'd be surprised what would happen. Surprised. All you have to do, and I doubt you'll ever get the opportunity, but mentally put yourself in that news helicopter above Los Angeles or Pittsburgh or Dallas or even St. Louis. And I want you to look at the traffic at 7 o'clock in the morning going to work. 6 lanes, 8 lanes, 10 lanes wide trying to get into toll booths or trying to inch their way along a highway for 25 or 30 miles to work, taking an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes to get there because the vehicles are moving so slow. But every single one of those engines is idling away, running that air conditioning, running that stereo. And although the passengers inside are very comfortable, they don't realize it, but they're pouring pollution into the atmosphere and drawing it right back into their vehicles and breathing it, and it is affecting them. I grew up in Los Angeles, and when I would wake up in the morning at 6 o'clock before going to high school, I could see the San Bernardino Mountains from my house. By 7:30, you couldn't see them. Smog from the cars on the freeways, idling along, waiting to get to work. A horrible, horrible sight to watch the L.A. Basin completely fill up with auto exhaust. I remember flying out of Burbank Airport one time. I was taking flying lessons. Went out, flew around Fox for, an hour or so, headed back to the airport. And do you realize I had to land on instruments because the smog had poured in through the pass so thick I could not see the airport from 5,000 feet. It was gone. Completely blocked out by auto exhaust. All of that would go away if we just had electric vehicles on that road instead of gasoline vehicles. You'd still have your air conditioning. You'd still have your stereo. You just wouldn't have the pollution. And that technology has been on the road for 15 years. That's true. 15 years ago, California tried to do something about it. In 1992, 1993, they passed a mandate requiring that 10% of their commuter fleet would be electric within 10 years. Well, entrepreneurs and inventors like our company saw the opportunity and put a vehicle on the road, hundreds of them. And then in 1998, Detroit attorneys sued the state of California and won, defeating the mandates. Well, the idea that someone had to buy an electric car in the state of California was defeated because of technicalities. And so we closed our doors for a while. And then in January of this year, at the annual shareholders meeting, the shareholders came to us and said, "Hey, we want you to bring back the electric car. Gas is expensive. I think electric cars would do really well right now." So we pulled it out of the garage, put a fresh coat of paint and tires on it, put it back on the road. We have several of them left, but most of them are out there driving and have done millions of miles without a major failure. All of the customers love them. I saw one on the eBay Motors the other day for $16,500. It was built in 1995. That's more than it sold for new. So they're holding their value pretty well. In any case, now the demand is back, and now the federal government has put out a $378 million federal grant, which is a grant of sorts. You have to come up with half the money yourself, but still, it's a grant. And hopefully, there's enough in there, and the language isn't preclusive to the point that no car company or no entrepreneur can qualify for it. Certainly, it looks like General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler are in terrible financial shape and definitely don't want to launch a new car program at this time. General Motors announced this week that they're shutting down car production. Shutting it down. Too much inventory in the system and not enough people buying new cars. That could be a direct result of the banks actually not having any money, and so they're not approving loans. Nevertheless, the market for electric cars seems to have come alive again. And certainly that is something we could do for our planet. A voluntary tax. Carve out $5 a month, pick a company, and send it to them. If you know an inventor that's working in his backyard or his garage or his attic, and he's got a great idea, he might need to put together a prototype. He might need someone to take that prototype too. And all of that takes money. You got to go to Radio Shack and you got to buy those parts. You got to buy electric motors. You got to buy magnets. You got to buy copper wire and gold wire and all of those things. And you know what, people? We've been doing it out of our paychecks because we're driven to do it. But it's time now for us to participate as a planet and to look forward a little bit. Yes, a little bit more forward than next payday, okay? A little bit more forward than next summer vacation. And certainly well before retirement. Many of us work in jobs that we hate. Can you imagine that? Going to work every day at a job that you despise. I couldn't imagine that. I guess I did it once when I was a teenager, but I couldn't do it now. Having too much fun. In any case, we don't want you to suffer away at that breaking your back or wearing your shoulder sockets out, hoping that you'll be able to buy that fishing boat and retire when you're 67 and a half now, is it? I hope you're not putting off your life until then. You better get started now. That's my advice to you. We have about 14 minutes left in this hour. The phone numbers, toll-free 888-228-4494. And if you've got free nights and weekends, by cell phone 530-776-5154. We have Stefan Wutuni coming on, second and third hours. Should be exciting. He's getting off work right about now, and he's heading for home. He's going to be waiting by the phone in about 15 minutes, and we're going to call him up and find out about how the pyramids are like us. And maybe what we had to do with building them in the first place. I'm sorry, had a note come in. Couldn't read and talk at the same time. You know, it's funny. There's a joyous child of hope inside each one of us. And we love to laugh, and we love to have a great time. And I think that we have in us the evolution that we can become. And as we near this place in the cosmos that applies this new frequency, this new energy to our DNA is beginning to change. Abilities that have never had before are beginning to awaken. You have noticed already that you're more telepathic. You are sensing when someone's going to call you. You already know people that you've never seen before. You know what people are going to say before they say it. And you know what they're thinking even without them saying anything. All of these abilities are the ones that are turning on inside of you. These are the things that are changing. These are the things that are awakening. Yeah, my producer writes me a long note, and I have to stop and read it because I can't read and talk at the same time, and he knows that. So I'm sitting there with my finger in my cheek going, now, this is a long sentence. I have to read this whole thing, and I'm sure he's laughing that I'm laughing. That's pretty funny. There are some things coming up this summer I want you to be aware of. Don't forget, I mean, mark this down. If you've got a piece of paper and you've got a refrigerator magnet, you need to mark this down, okay? June 19th through 21st, okay? The 19th to the 21st of this year, there is an event, and it's going to be near you because it happens in 26 cities at the same time. It's called the H2O Live Concert, okay? The reason I want you to pay close attention to this is because millions of people are going to be involved in this, but the musicians that are playing in these 26 different venues, and there's Klondike and Rosita Stone, there's Scott Huckabee, Peter Sterling, how can I go on, Tony Salvage, all kinds of different, White Eagle Medicine Woman, and there's Olga Lashansi, Eben Larson, Kumiko, all of these names, Leeson Sclover, The Bolt, Gemma Bulos. They're playing all over the world, and they're tuning their instruments to 528 hertz, a new middle C note. And the reason they're doing this is the frequency of love. This event, over 26 cities, and if you need to find out about it, you can go to liveh2o.org, or you can click on the liveh2o.org banner at X Squared Radio. It's very simple. It goes right there. It's the 19th through the 21st. It's 24 hours a day for 3 days. It is the largest earth healing event in history. In history. And the cities are just about everywhere. Bulgaria, Cairo, Calgary, Cardiff, Chicago, South Africa, Canada, Greece, Hawaii, the Big Island, Houston, Texas, Sudan in Khartoum, Kudaka Island, Japan, Libby, Montana, London, England, Long Beach, California, Los Cabos, Mexico. The list goes on and on. Paisley, Oregon, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Puerto Pinasco, Mexico, Saskatoon in Saskatchewan, Canada, Sedona, Arizona, Sydney, Australia, Toronto, Ontario, Kampala, Uganda, Vancouver, BC, that's where I'll be speaking, and Venezuela. Now, this is a big event, people. It's close to you. Click on the H2O live concert link at X Squared Radio and put it on your calendar. It will make a difference. We need you to be involved in this concert because the synergy, the resonance of this energy going out, according to my friends that are putting it on, that will change the world. It will change the world. And that's what I want you to pay attention to. So join us. Come out there and be involved in it. I promise you won't regret it. And also pay attention very closely to the aura of things that are happening around you. Just the people, just the events. Notice how things change. If you ever are interested in auras and you can't really see them with the naked eye, some people can, some people can't. There are instruments out there, and they're called, it's called Aura Imaging. That's the best company that I've found out there. You can buy the little Polaroid ones that take the snapshot, and you can go through a lot of expensive film and pile up some things in a drawer that you look at from time to time. But Aura Imaging actually has a really neat piece of software that goes on your computer, and most laptops come with a little webcam built already into them, and webcams are pretty cheap. They're, I don't know, between $50 and $150, depends on how fancy you get with them. But Aura Imaging gives you the little hand transducer. This is a unit that's got little electrodes in it, and you place your hand upon it, and then the energy from your energy body links up with this transducer. And the camera looks at your body and picks up the aura around you, and lo and behold, you can see your aura interactively, that is to say, as a method of biofeedback, on your own laptop screen. It's true. You can sit there and in meditation or in reading or in listening to music, and you can watch what your aura is doing while you're doing those activities. It could be a very important method of biofeedback for you. Also, if you are so entrepreneurial as to think this way, you can actually go out to conventions or small gatherings or even city parks, and you can use your equipment to make images of others, and the Aura Imaging software is so good that it will actually do most of the analysis of the aura for the person themselves. So not only do you get the image, but you get a very nice report that people can take home and learn about themselves. It's sort of like an on-the-spot astrology reading, except it's the actual energy that exists sometimes a foot, sometimes 2 feet around the human body. It's difficult to see, but indeed it is there. And this camera system does pick it up. And it's kind of neat. No, it isn't kind of neat. It's really neat. So in order to get this system for yourself or to learn about it, all you have to do is click on the Aura Imaging link at xsquaredradio.com. It's simple, really easy. And this is the company that makes the stuff you always wanted to know. So now you've got it. Now you've got the idea. And that's basically all you have to do. And it's important because what we want you to do is we want you to learn about the energy that you're putting off. Your pets are privy to it. They see it. And perhaps human beings see it too, but we've kind of tuned our minds out of seeing the images other than what we see from photons reflecting off of people's faces. We don't really see the energy that's around them because it's in the periphery, and we're told only pay attention to the things that are in focus in your lives and not the things that are slightly out of focus on the periphery. So goes the rationalization of our world. If we can just avoid that, then perhaps we can learn even more about each other as a human race. We can even learn more about being brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers, sons and daughters, and be a little more forgiving, a little more merciful, and even better, communicators, because we will notice what it is we're saying and we're doing and how it affects others, and that should inspire you one way or the other. So, first hour of X Squared Radio gone. I know all the networks are full. And apologize for Denny and Brinkley not coming on tonight. It's just one of those things that happens from time to time. We have guests that show a desire to come up, but we realize Sunday afternoon on the West Coast is hard to remember about X Squared Radio and the effect that we can have here, but maybe another time. Not a problem, not a problem at all. We will be back right after these messages. Actually, I think I'll just let you listen to some music for about 3 minutes, and we'll be back as soon as we can get Stefan Wutuny on the phone. Here we go. Squared Radio, coming to you live from Western Kentucky, from deep beneath the earth. Our AccuWeather window forecast is about, 80 degrees. So, we'll get started with this hour. Second hour, X Squared Radio.
The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
And welcome back. Second hour, X Squared Radio. This is a 3-hour program on the BBS Radio Network. And if you're listening to us on the Conscious Media Network, that's great. Check out the archives at pbsradio.com, and if you think you have what it takes to be a talk radio host, There are openings for you. All you have to do is go to bbsradio.com and sign up. Don, my producer, will take care of you. India launched its first radar imaging satellite along with a university-built messaging spacecraft April 20th from the Satish Dhawan Space Center on the country's southeastern coast aboard a polar satellite launch vehicle rocket. Perhaps we will get some public images of the North Pole, after all, in a few days. Let's wait and see. Couples could be allowed to store embryos in order to use them to create new body parts or cure diseases. Government legal and ethical experts are to discuss whether families can bank embryos not just for procreation, but also for use by doctors to create personalized treatments for parents and their children. And there is enough money and power behind this to make it a reality, folks. If not in this country, then in others. The mega-rich stars are already showing up with a new spring in their step as they opt out of surgery or Botox and head for the stem cell clinics. Our guest for the next 2 hours of tonight's X Squared radio program, April 26, 2009, is known as the Pyramid Dreamer. He is an Earth explorer and a seeker of knowledge from all true sources. Please welcome with me Stefan Wutuni. How are you, Stefan?
I'm excellent, Brooke. Thank you very much for having me.
I
and I like that
there.
Pyramid Dreamer. I'll have to use that.
So, there he is. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I just got home from work, actually.
I'm still not hearing him. That's okay. I know this is live radio, and we always have our fun times here, but last week we had the most amazing time. The studio
testing.
Yeah, we're testing. We're here. Are you there?
Yep, sure am.
Ah, okay, here we are then. Stefan, welcome to the program.
Hello, Brooks, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I'm excited about having you here tonight. Sooner or later, the average person is going to pick up a book or tune into History Channel and ask themselves, gee, I wonder who really built the pyramids and all that stuff. So what do you say to people when they ask that question to you?
Well, to tell you the truth, Brooks, I approach the Great Pyramid pretty much the same way as I do with the crop circle phenomenon. I attribute less importance personally to the building and to the authorship of the pyramid as I do its symbolism and the why of its nature. First of all, of course, as I say on my site, I'm not an Egyptologist. I'm not even a scientist. I have tastes in science, and I like reading about it, but from a professional standpoint, I'm a complete nobody on the topic. My viewpoint of the pyramid is that it's a symbol, basically, and I try to address it in terms of that way, but I will say that whoever built it, based on the findings and the research that I've done, was an absolute genius. Whether they were from Earth or not, just absolutely genius.
Well, that's true. I mean, it takes a lot of looking at it. You can go walk around it and say, gee, that's a really interesting pile of rocks, but as you look at the structure of it, you look at how it's built, but and the precision that it's built with. You know, the Great Pyramid of Giza is so much different than the other pyramids. It's just like, you know, the Egyptians want you to believe, well, we built this one last, we were practicing with all these others, we finally got it right. I have a tendency to believe maybe the big one was built first and all the others were the copies. You know, let's see if we can build another one like that one.
That's pretty much my findings on it as well. In fact, my opinion echoes pretty much what we've heard with Ken Klein, who was on your show recently as well, that the Great Pyramid was most likely, because of the precision of its construction, because of its size, everything about it pretty much dictates that it must have been one of the earliest, if not the earliest, pyramid in Egypt, and that all the other ones were, like you said, copycats or photocopies, Xeroxes.
Yeah, and I get the feeling that they may have even stripped off the beautiful alabaster surface that they had, the limestone that they covered it with to make it gleam so white in the sunshine, to try to see how it was made underneath. I mean, sure, maybe vandals stripped it all off, and it's used all over Cairo if you look around, but you know, there's maybe this idea, gee, we moved here, and this building's there, but we don't really know what it's for. We can't get into it. We don't know how it was built. Let's crack it open and see if we can make one for ourselves.
Yeah, and, you know, if that's what they did, then it just amazes me. Well, first of all, with the nature of knowledge itself and expertise, and especially in terms of physical construction, you would think that a civilization dedicated to building 117 objects after the big one would get it right where they would actually surpass it, and they haven't. The Great Pyramid isn't called the seventh and last remaining wonder of the ancient world for nothing. I mean, it's the best and the biggest and the most well-built of all the pyramids in all of Egypt. And at this point, barring what we might find in Bosnia or India, probably in the world as well. So, you know, it's a real... And I think also the allure of the pyramid, Brooks, is that it holds a fascination for people regardless of the way they approach it. The scientist and the engineer, as you were saying, might look at its physical nature and marvel over that. People that are more, I would say, involved in the esoteric sciences might look at it from a metaphysical point of view. Artists might look at it from another point of view, engineers, so forth. And so it does hold something for everyone. And in that sense, as I discuss on my site at dreamingthepyramid.net, that I think that the pyramid reflects us as a symbol, to be used as a symbol for our, I'm going to say, our physical and our spiritual evolution, if I want to get a little esoteric on that.
Well, I like that. You know, the inevitability that we will each discover that we have lived far longer than we can imagine will fall upon us. And when we do that, maybe the lid will lift just a little. And when we see light coming out of the box, we might ask ourselves, gee, maybe I've existed longer than just this earth. I mean, I guess I got a question for you. How did you come to your remembering about the pyramids?
Well, to put a long journey short, what happened was I started dreaming about it when I was 22. I was working in Calgary, Alberta, Canada at the time, and not really sure what was going on. And I started dreaming about it, feeling physical touches on my skin, not hearing voices, but feeling voices, I would say, because they would occur just as I was going to sleep or just as I was waking up. And over the long haul, 2 or 3 years after that, the information really stepped up in gear, and I started reading everything I could, devouring volumes of information on every possible subject I could find. And after a while, the information started coming together in ways that started forming a story, you know, and pretty much put it together in terms of the pyramid for me is that it represents us physically, but also esoterically in terms of metaphysics like astrology, numerology, even things like geology, computer science. You know, it's just I don't even think we've scratched the surface of what the pyramid is in terms of our findings on it these days. And I'm hoping that if the pyramid was built to reflect us, and that we'll find our own answers as to what it is individually, that it's going to play a large part in helping us save ourselves. Basically, we'll become our own messiahs. I'm not against the whole messiah element that Christians are for, but I really like the idea of us playing an integral part of the process as well. You know, like, it's time that we stop acting like spoiled teenagers across the planet and start putting our own backstrokes in the water and getting ourselves out of our own mess, is what I think.
Well, you've opened a lot of subjects there, so let me go back and try to read between the lines just a little bit here. Because, okay. I mean, it's clear when an engineer or a physicist or somebody, an architect, walks up to the pyramid, sure, they've seen pictures of it, they've heard stories about it, they've probably even seen a few History Channel specials on it. But when you see it, when you walk into it and you look at the scope of this and you say, gee, this thing was made out of stone, ostensibly by a people who had no wheel, let alone a standard system of measurement. And that, it puts us in awe right away. Now,
absolutely.
The interesting thing is that I guess one has to ask the question, because we kind of broached on it there right at the beginning. You know, who built the pyramids? We don't really know. But I got a pretty good idea who didn't build it. I don't think the Egyptians built it.
Yeah, or at least not as we know them for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think it took more advanced, shall I say, mechanized or even levitation skills that we don't have. Now, that being said, if I was the designer of that thing, and I was putting in all these little aspects that might escape, you know, the tourist who's coming to see it, but the engineer or someone looking at it from, say, 50,000 feet up or 30,000 feet up, who would notice that the straight edges along the outside aren't straight at all, but they're actually arced in exactly the same arc as the circumference of the Earth. All kinds of neat arrangements of this thing. I would say, you know what, guys, my team, we're going to build this building so that it is so amazing that at the right time, people are going to stand in awe of this and wonder who built it, and they're going to start remembering.
I like that. I like that, Brooks, because what you've opened up there is the door to the idea of perception and vision and vantage point. Someone who would have built the pyramid, designed it, probably would have designed it, as you said, to be seen from... The first decoy, I think, when you're looking at the pyramid is its size. It's so easy to be impressed by size that it can almost lead you away from looking at its message. And when you look at it from a plane or 50,000 feet above, as you said, you can see it, the curve, and you notice that, okay, its size isn't the only thing it is. It's ratios in the way it was built. Its angles.
Very good.
Another message, you know? So yeah. I think that, and also, of course, the other thing, too, is looking at the pyramid itself, the overwhelmingly simple and easy explanation, first of all, is to say that it represents half of an octahedron crystal because it's in the shape of one, pretty much almost exactly, except for that slight curvature that you were talking about, 51 degrees between its apex and the center base. So it would imply that beneath the pyramid, if not physically, that it was meant to portray at least the idea that that an identical pyramid exists beneath it.
Has that ever been tested? Has anyone ever gone and, you know, dug a tunnel under there or done any kind of ground probing radar to see if there's actually half of a octahedron placed beneath the sand?
Well, personally, I don't think there is. There might be, but... I would see that kind of effort building that to be kind of futile, especially with Earth movements. And also, it's like, you know, why would you do that if you can get the message across simply by implication instead? But also, it could be. You know, it could very well be.
Another perspective
of an artist.
That's good.
I'm sorry?
I said another perspective of an artist. That's good. It's sort of like the Little Prince, you know, where he made the box with the sheep inside. Instead of drawing a picture of the sheep, he draws a box with holes. And
yeah.
And the person has to actually imagine looking inside the box to see the sheep.
Yeah, exactly. Let's think maximum results with minimum effort. You know, a basic business rule, and you apply that to the pyramid. You seek to create the maximum effect, and you put it in such a way that... First of all, the pyramid had to be that size in order to avoid being destroyed, lost, stolen, broken, blown apart, whatever. It had to be massive. Otherwise, it wouldn't have remained throughout the centuries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that was probably one of the architect's main considerations in designing that structure. I think the second one itself has to do with the message. And as you said, in regards to all the other things, when you look at the curvature of the Earth, If it contains a lot of things pertaining to science that we have only discovered in the last, say, 20 years, then that message would have had to endure over time to survive to this period in order to be deciphered. And not to degrade the work of those who have so studiously looked at the pyramid to devise their theories and their ideas and everything else, but I feel that the pyramid has much more to say than what's been revealed so far, you know, and we're just starting to scratch that now. And this also ties in, just to quickly come back to, as you were saying, with humans coming to realize and remember and reawaken, we have to look also at the idea that we're one out of 26 million species on the planet, over 26 million. And out of that 26 million, we're the only, absolute only species that we know of that has done what we've done so far. Create skyscrapers, as Edgar Mitchell said, theorize about our own thinking, philosophy. We're the only ones that can actively go into space rather than be involved like chimps or plants. There's so much that differentiates us from animals that eventually, I think, at this current rate, along with the internet and everything else that's creating, we're eventually probably going to realize that we're becoming our own creators, so to speak. So the real danger is that is how will we use that power in the future? You know, we're going to be realizing that. I don't want to step on too many theological toes here, but we're going to re-become it. We're going to become our own gods. Re-become our own gods, and with that comes responsibility. We're going to have to learn how to manage that.
I like that word, and we're going to talk about that word some more later. But you've opened a question that we have to ask at this time, because, you know, the realization that the pyramid is what it is or is what it could be didn't come too soon, didn't come too late. So the designers of it had to know something about what the condition of the world would be right at the right time in the right place. Do you believe that the pyramids were built by us?
It could very well be. If we're talking about time travel, dimension portal shifts in terms of extraterrestrials or off-world intelligences or inner-world intelligences or wherever they're from, it could be that they were us in a different time period that left a time capsule for us to rediscover in this time frame. I've thought about that. It's certainly possible. I think it would be kind of scary to be confronted with that reality if it took place. But, hey, you know, This is after Generation Y. You know, I don't think it's possible to shock young people anymore. I think the world is ready for change. You know, and if that takes place, if we took a part in creating the pyramid for us to decipher, what a fantastic realization that would be. I think it would be scary, but what a fantastic thing to go through.
Well, it opens more possibilities than that. If you're thinking about the shock factor of time travel. Someone asked me one time, do you think time travel will ever be invented? I said, well, if it is ever invented, it exists now. Because time travelers from the future would come back to now, so therefore it exists now. So maybe someone from the far distant future went into our past and created the pyramids, knowing that right about now we need a wake-up call.
Yeah. And also, you know, it also begs the whole issue of time itself. I mean, we only have time because we can measure it in terms of the rotation of the Earth, the length of the time that the sun goes around the Earth, and from sunrise to sunset, and even atomic clocks, regarded as generally the most precise time instruments on the planet, are even subject to atmospheric pressure. So there's nothing set in absolute stone in regards to our measurement of time. So time itself would probably be a much more flexible thing than how most people think of it. So, yeah, I think going back and forth would be possible, and even perhaps in some cases desirable. I mean, who wouldn't, especially as we get older, who wouldn't want to be 20 again or 15 or depending on, or if you want to get older at some point, you know?
That's one way to think about it.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, if we're spirits encased in bodies, wouldn't it be better, wouldn't it be more desirable to live in a state where everything becomes a possibility rather than cut off, you know, things that we would want anyway.
Hopefully it's...
Boy, I don't know where I'm going with that, but...
Hopefully it's a possibility and not absolutely necessary, which is...
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
And there's another way of looking at it, too. Maybe... time travel isn't the reality, and we didn't come back to the past to build the pyramid. Maybe we built the pyramid and have reincarnated over and over again until now to try to give us a time capsule, a memory piece, an icon, something that would, you know, make us put our finger on our chin and go, what the hell is that thing for? I know it means something. Sort of like when I was thinking of Close Encounters of the Third Kind when Richard Dreyfuss was just pulling his hair out trying to figure out what the heck the shape was, and he turns around and there on TV is the Devil's Tower, and he puts two and two together. We're struggling, you and I, trying to put two and two together about this pyramid. What does it mean? Why does it do what it does? You know, and we have to ask ourselves, well, I'm going to ask you, do you think we are from this planet originally?
Brooks, I'm just going to cut to the chase and say it straight out. I think we co-created this planet.
Good. That's
yeah,
a good thought.
I think we co-created it in the beginning, and we're just remembering that now. We're at the precipice of beginning to discover that we are co-creators. Much like a video game. You know, you launch it. Well, I don't know if you played ever a good video game, but some of them are so immersive today. You create a character that's custom to your tastes. You decide their look. You give them a name. You decide their equipment, and you step into that world. And that world seems so immersive, your player character, that you lose yourself in it. And if you don't watch out, you can actually become addicted. You can lose your job. You can lose your girlfriend or wife. You can lose everything you have and only live for that world. It's like many people are doing today with video games.
Yeah, but it doesn't work.
You know, so yeah, it doesn't work. You know, you have to remember where you're from, and so I think we have a dual identity. You know, and I really do think that we helped co-create this place. I know it sounds crazy, but we're doing it right now. I mean, even in prehistoric times, people were taking pigments and creating worlds on caves in terms of paintings and telling oral stories around the campfires. And then authors started doing it with words and a printed word and creating worlds like that for other people to step into. Then television, radio came along, and people started creating worlds with movies. And now, as I said, computer programmers are doing the same thing with binary code and compilers and creating programs where people can actually step into virtual worlds. And what's the next step after this? Because guaranteed there will be one.
Sure.
So,
well, it beats holograms and grunting and doing charades trying to get your point across. If you've ever traveled to a foreign country, like I traveled to Japan, I'm getting ready to go to China here in a couple of weeks. What happens to me when I'm over there, especially when I'm working in engineering, is it's exhausting because an 8-hour day will just wear you out trying to get your idea across to someone who doesn't understand what you are saying.
Yeah, and vice versa for them. You know, they probably experience the same culture shock in trying to explain the simplest of things to them to us.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, here's a question. You know, because you're on this program and you've had these, let's just call them downloads. You've had all this information. By the way, I'm going to ask you some questions about the language that you're hearing and the messages that you're getting. Is it pure information, or is it pieces that you have to put together, or is it a step-by-step manual, or the finished thing? I mean, there's all kinds of these different downloads, but I'm really curious about it. But my question is, why do you think that this awakening that everyone's going through seems to be hastening? Why do you think it's going faster and faster?
More is at stake. It's like investment. If you were a banker and you put all your money into one area, you would want maximum return on that investment, right? Well,
sure.
If we put a lot of time in the past in co-creating this realm and making an absolute fantastic paradise, if that paradise becomes threatened in any way, you're going to put all of your effort into trying to fix the situation. So let's put that in terms of spiritualistic terms, in terms of entities or souls that come into this world. There's probably an influx of souls coming into this world hell-bent on trying to create the maximum effect, amount of positive change they can in the shortest time possible. So you have kids being born with genius-like abilities. You have, and even people that are already on this planet. And, you know, they feel an absolute urgent, rushing desire within them to focus all of their energy into trying to make this a better place. So
oh, yeah.
I think all of that you create, and you see the apathy and the depression around the world, and it really tends to bring people down. So high gear has to be stepped into by all the people that other people call light workers, and you just try to do the best you can, you know. It's tough, but you got to do it. just to give an example,
if you and I were designers of the pyramids thousands of years ago, if the idea or if the reality that when we grow old and die, that's it, we're done, were true, and we believed that, there's no way we would go through one generation at least, maybe two generations, to figure out how to build that thing, hack it out of stone, and build it. Because why would we care about a civilization 5 millennia in the future unless it was us? Unless we were trying to leave a message in architecture for ourselves, and we left our message in pictures instead of words, because the words that we understand perfectly well in writing, we knew we wouldn't understand 5 or 6 millennia in the future. We would have to build architecture that would withstand the test of time so we could be here to view it.
Brooks, if I could hug you right now, I would. That's exactly what I've been feeling all these years, you know. Like, I mean, the language has to be so universal and so simple, and especially simple, that it has to be understood by virtually any civilization that or any group of people that wants to discover its truths, its meaning, its symbolism. If it's complicated, it's probably not worth it. If it's simple, if it's beautiful, and if it's universal, and numbers, if it involves math, ratios, how can you miss? You know that in the future, provided that people are, if they're keen on it, they'll eventually decipher it.
Well, but you're thinking that way because you're an artist. You think in terms of texture and form and color. Me as an engineer, as a mathematician, I would look at it and say, wow, what beautiful ratios, what perfectly straight angles, and look how it's pointed and aligned, you know, but these are the two universal languages, right? Art and math, and its sister, music.
Perfect marriage of both, exactly. And it also, there's so much going on within the pyramid. It reflects us as a mirror, as I was saying. And I'm really going to be curious, once the website really takes off, like so far I've had about 180,000 people since June of last year, which is not bad for a non-commercial site.
And, not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I'm actually pretty happy with that. And I'm hoping that that'll create a small step in towards other people being able to look at it in a new way. Or I don't really even think it's new. I think it's old, and I either stumbled across it or I'll have managed to come up with an interesting perspective to share with others. But I'm looking forward to what other people come up with and learning and growing off of that as well. So that's my hope for it.
Well, I'm thinking, though, that the style of your knowledge, because you haven't actually gone there. You haven't been a student of it. You didn't take classes in archaeology and listen to those that have analyzed it and reanalyzed it. Your downloads, your information is much more pure. It's much more original. And I have a feeling that it's coming to you in the form of memories, not new stuff, but old stuff that you're remembering and trying to put into words and into your art and your perspective now in this day. Am I getting close?
I would like to think that's true. My only thing with that is that I have no conscious memory of it whatsoever. If I was in Egypt during the time and I was probably some form of scribe or something like that back then, I love writing, so maybe I had that back then. But if I was involved, then I have no conscious memory of it. But you're right, it could be memory. Maybe I was on the site at some point. I do remember some of the dreams that came in back in 1992 and 93 when this really came about. I was 22 and 23 years old at the time, and I said I had no interest in Egypt. I had no interest in the Great Pyramid. It was just another big thing in the desert as far as I was concerned. And the first dreams came in, and in one dream in particular, I saw myself in a valley, and I was walking along with someone who was quite a bit taller than I was. I'm 6 foot, and this person was at least 8.5 to 8 feet tall. And it felt like a masculine presence. And as we were walking along, I could see that we were in some sort of a big construction site. There were other people all around, but they looked different than how we think of people today. They looked something different. I can't nail it, though. And as we were walking alongside this huge structure, I saw these great big symbols on its sides, but I couldn't really see them well. And then right at that point, my vision zoomed out And it zoomed out to probably around a few hundred yards away, and all of a sudden I saw a great big pyramid with these symbols on the sides, each one for each corner, basically. So there was 12 symbols total. And I don't remember what they looked like in the dream, but later on, because I was just starting to get interested in astrology and numerology, along with the sciences, that I discovered that if you took the 12 signs of the zodiac and put them in exact chronological order as they appear during a normal calendar year, so that what you get is a 12-hour clock face with the signs, if you link the 12 signs with each other in the way that they occur with the four elements, so for instance, Earth has Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn, Fire has Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius, and so on, what you get is a 12-point star. And the magic begins when you take that 12-point star, those four triangles that you've created by linking the signs together, and you lean them up against each other, and bang, you get a pyramid. You know, and I found correlations with that within the Bible, as I also put on the site. So, yeah, definitely dreams, and they could be memories, but at this point I'm not really giving too much importance to that. For me, the most important thing is always the message and sharing it with people, but it's possible. Maybe I was there. Maybe you were too. we're talking together right now.
Well, I kind of like that idea, but I have this idea that the idea for the pyramid did not come from this world.
No, I don't think so, because I think it's Brian O'Leary, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brian O'Leary and I was going to call him Dr. Flanders, but one of them passed away recently from some sort of rare cancer.
Oh.
And they were talking about...
Wouldn't that be Tom Van Flandern?
Tom Van Flanders, thank you.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the latest images coming in from Mars and how they found several pyramid-like structures on Mars. So, as you were saying, Brooks, the idea of the pyramid, the concept of the pyramid itself might not only be earthbound, but certainly within our solar system and perhaps even a universal symbol.
Well, it is certainly on a molecular level, it's certainly recognizable. And other than the tetrahedron being the first form out of two dimensions, it's the first form of the third dimension, the tetrahedron. The pyramid is certainly the second, and denotes cardinal points, north, east, south, and west. The most remarkable thing about the pyramid is its size and its precision and its placement at the absolute center of all landmass on the planet. But it is not alone. What about the structures in the area around Mexico? Are they from here?
According to oral legends from that area, they say that a paler-skinned man appeared amongst them at one point. I've read Graham Hancock saying how he came from the east, from the oceans, and he started teaching the people all about agriculture, the art, economy, basically raising them out of barbarianism, and how perhaps the pyramids down there were as a result of his interaction with those people. I have no qualms against that whatsoever. I think it's actually probably quite likely that they were given that information.
I think in Bolivia they called them the Shining Ones, and they even brought Sumerian writing, and I know the Sumerians never traveled to Bolivia, but I think the teachers of the Sumerians did travel to Bolivia and teach them as well.
Well, you know, we're entering a time period right now where even the electrical grid around the planet is becoming pretty fragile. We're discovering from cyber attacks and all sorts of things, and it wouldn't take much to knock it out, solar flares notwithstanding. And during that time period, if electrical communications are out and we're not able to communicate across vast distances with each other, it would be a pretty time period for someone else to come in from the outside and start appearing in and doing their work. You know, I'm not saying that's the framework in which like an event like that would take place, but it would certainly give them an opportunity to do so.
Well, do you think that planet Earth is nearing a new place in the cosmos, the way the Mayan calendar says?
Yeah, because it can't get much worse. you know, what's it going to be like after this? Are reality shows going to show people making love right in front on national airwaves? Are they going to kill each other for money? I mean, we're already at a low point morally speaking, you know, let alone environmentally.
Well, I think certainly
black isn't even just a color anymore. It's a fashion statement, you know. Like the young people, we need leadership, basically. We need a new direction. And the only way pretty much to go from this point on is up. Otherwise, we just go out, basically.
Well, I certainly think the stratification is getting more dramatic. That is to say, there are lows in this world. There definitely are. But there are also extreme highs, which have not existed before either. And I shudder to think that maybe they're in balance with one another. I don't think they're in balance with them. I think they're designed to be out of balance. The idea that there's some mean or average consciousness of the world is mathematically plausible. But the idea that never shifts, that there's extreme good and extreme bad, or there's mild good and mild bad, but the mean, the average, always stays the same. I don't believe in that. I really believe that, as you say, we are the co-creators of this world, and if we want it to shift more toward heaven on this earth, we can do so.
Yep. And, you know, it's an individual journey towards remembering that and putting it in practice, because every once in a while, Brooks, I don't know if you do this, but I do it once in a while. I throw little hooks to young people, say people under the age of 20, and I ask them about the state of the world. I ask them about whether they think or not ETs exist. I ask them about different things like that, you know. And of course, a lot of them, there's no reaction whatsoever, either because they're shy or they only open up to you in private. But a lot of them do, you know, and they think about it a lot. That generation isn't lost. They're just really, they're hungry. Actually, they're starving for new information and a new direction on the earth. And they're the new warriors of tomorrow, man. They're going to be at the forefront. They're going to be the spearheading of the, they're going to be spearheading the movements around the world to help get this world out of, well, they're just basically the next generation of warriors that way. The good kind of warriors. So
peaceful warriors.
I have a lot of hope for the future, you know, but we're definitely going into some rougher times right now.
Well, you know, rougher times is a matter of perspective. We, I guess, create our own reality. I guess my question now would be, because we're about halfway through our time together, because you're only on for 2 hours. Normally, this is a three-hour program, and we kind of build up slowly, but we're building up really quickly to a crescendo, and this is the question, the key question. This pyramid that was built at Giza, it represents a lot more than just a pile of rock. It has certain alignments with the human body, and that alignment, the whole planet, in fact, is coming to a new place in the cosmos. So therefore, the capabilities of the human body, i.e. the DNA and the consciousness, and the meaning of the pyramid are both taking on incredible importance. And people like you, and I think you're the first one that I've actually spoken to, and I've spoken to a lot of people about the pyramids, that has compared the pyramid to the human being. So can you fill us in on that comparison?
Okay. I'll try to give you the executive version. There's basically eight ways, eight main ways in which the pyramid represents us. First of all, looking at the human body per se, human beings, we essentially consist of the four elements. You know, we have earth because we have substance, air because we breathe it, water because 85% water or more, fire, you know, keeps it at 98.6 degrees centigrade. And also we have the 12 elements, so we can be born, 12 signs of the zodiac, so we can be born under one of the 12 signs of the zodiac. So we have that within us. We also have crystals, because our bodies, even though we're carbon-based, also contain elements that when our bodies die, they eventually contribute to the formation of crystals in the earth and soil itself. So we have crystals. We also contain chakras, simply by the simple reason that when you shine a light into a crystal prism, you get the spectrum on the other side, you know, so corresponding with the body's chakras. We also have third eye, which I like to compare to a modem between the computer and the internet, so to speak. So in other words, between heaven and earth. As long as that sixth sense or that third eye is active, it allows us to travel back and forth mentally and perhaps even physically at some point to these different dimensions. It's almost like our own personal spaceship, so to speak. Also, Kundalini, so we're coming to the seventh element here, which is basically just an energy most often portrayed as a serpent existing within the body along with the chakras and the spinal column. And it finds its direct equivalent within the story of creation as the famed serpent within the Garden of Eden, but also within ancient English literature and lore as well. I mean, when you think of a dragon is simply a flying reptile, you know, which is pretty much what Kundalini is. It's a serpent with wings, according to Buddhism. You also find it within Mexican First Nations or Native American culture in terms of Quetzalcoatl, which was also a winged serpent. And then you look at China. They have flying dragons all over in the Orient and different parts of the world as well. Australia has the rainbow serpent, you know, so that's their version. And then the last element that is within the human bodies and probably the most controversial and difficult to accept is the idea, Brooks, that originally in the past we may have been more androgynous. And I know that's a difficult pill to accept because, speaking as a guy, I love being a guy. You know, I like my physiognomy, for one, and I like the strength of my muscles. I love being a man. But it also, at some point, when you look at the reality of human beings and the way they're built, one's concave, one's convex, one tends to think more logically, the other one tends to use a lot of intuition and feeling. Each gender has a lot of what the other one lacks in general, although that's quickly becoming no longer so true. So it begs the idea that maybe since you have these two halves or these two parts, maybe they were one at some point, you know, if not physically androgynous, at least much more like each other, where we could maybe in the past we were more flexible in our gender. Now, how does the Great Pyramid represent all that? To put it in real short order, each side of the pyramid represents one element. And as I was saying with astrology earlier, each side of the pyramid also contains three signs, because in astrology, each element also contains three signs. So you have earth, air, water, and fire, and each one has three signs. Now, hold on, I'm just going to refer to my site here real quick because I'm a visual person. I like to be reminded visually of things. Now, so we got into the elements and then we got into astrology. Now let's look at third eye. So where's the third eye in the pyramid? Well, it's everywhere in Egypt. There's all sorts of hieroglyphs and depictions of this eye, and they call it the eye of Ra or the eye of Horus. But it could be, according to my theory anyway, that in the past, it originally meant third eye, you know, and it just got kind of distorted over time to become something else. Now, where do we find that also in today's symbolism? Well, third eye, a lot of people call it the sixth sense. And also, if you look at Lord of the Rings, like, who was the villain in Lord of the Rings? It was Sauron. And where did Sauron dwell? So where Sauron dwelt on top of this huge tower with an eye on top. You know, so whether consciously or unconsciously, we portray that same relationship between an eye and a structure or a body within our own culture. So it's transcendent, you know. It's transcendental, I mean. It goes forward and back through time. No problem there. Now, let's look at crystals. We have crystals within our body, and how is the pyramid a crystal? Well, look at its shape. You know, as you were saying, a tetrahedron is essentially half of an octahedron crystal. And if not physically, then whoever designed the pyramid probably meant to imply that beneath the pyramid would be the idea that it had an identical pyramid beneath it. Now, where do we find that in today's culture? Look at the Da Vinci Code and when that came out, and Tom Hanks was walking in the city, and all of a sudden he came to the famous glass pyramid at the Louvre Museum. And he was reminded of a top pyramid made of glass and a bottom one pyramid of glass, and each one symbolizing something. Well, we'll get into that later. But essentially there you have a crystal shape as well. And essentially also what that implies is that if we have crystals in our bodies, Brooks, then it implies that whatever crystals are capable of doing, so are we. And we know, of course, that crystals are absolutely 100% essential in everything that we know of in terms of modern technology, especially with computers. Without crystals and silicon technology, we have no lasers. LCD screens, that's gone. Computers, CDs, GPS devices, telephones, cell phones, even things like camera lenses, you know, where it's ground glass, honed to perfection. So technology, as great and as essential as it might seem to us right now, is simply a crutch, you know, because we surpass our technology, because we created it. So in the future, I think as we evolve, we'll become our technology. We won't need crutches anymore. We won't need the tech. We'll be our own technology. We'll be able to do practically anything that we conceive of, practically just with our own minds or collectively. Okay, so we got two more elements to go here, and the other one is the Kundalini. How does the pyramid represent a serpent? It does it in two ways. Egypt is replete with depictions of winged serpents. I know one is Wajet. I don't know about the others, but cobras, of course, are redeemed throughout Egypt. I mean, they're present everywhere throughout Egypt in the symbolism and the religion. And also, if you look at the mask of King Tut, he also has a cobra coming out of his forehead, symbolizing Kundalini. Because the pyramid, the cobra doesn't end there. It extends back into his forehead, down through his body, throughout his spinal column, you know. So there's probably also a relationship between the Kundalini and third eye. Now, where do we find the Kundalini in Central American culture? Well, look at Quetzalcoatl. On the vernal and fall equinoxes, every year, hundreds of people gather at the temple of Chichen Itza in the Yucatan Valley to witness what happens when the sun shines upon a certain spot on the pyramid and a shadow resembling a serpent goes up and down the pyramid. So again, there we have a representation of a serpent, a winged serpent, up and down a pyramid, again resembling Kundalini. So Kundalini represents I kind of liken it to a caretaker or a messenger. It can carry our thoughts, our emotions, everything else from here to other dimensions. And as long as our chakras, as long as our crystals are clear, so in other words, in our bodies, as long as our chakras are shining brightly, Kundalini is fully activated and can go up and down the spine into different realms.
Well, now, there's one other thing that I want to make sure that maybe you do some research on as far as crystals,
sure.
Because what used to cap the pyramid when it was in its full shape and form was a crystal form of the pyramid, and when the sun struck this pyramid, it would form a serpent shape on the inside of it, and it would leave a shadow or a light pattern on the ground, outside the pyramid on the ground. And
I haven't heard that before.
Depending on where the sun was as it passed through the heavens, that serpent would change aspect to form each of the Hebrew letters. And that's where the Hebrew alphabet came from.
Wow.
So it was sort of it was sort of the language from God, you know, directly from Ra, coming through that crystal onto the ground. And maybe, I'm not sure, but maybe that's why the pharaohs used to wear the amulet around their head, the snake, because they were trying to say that they were the source of wisdom and knowledge for the people. I'm not sure. That's a speculation on my part. But the capstone to the pyramid was a crystal pyramid, and it did have a serpent shape inside of it.
Fascinating stuff. Just so I can, I want to get back to your listeners, but could you tell me a title of a book or an author I can look up for this?
Yes, the person to look up would be William Cruttendon. He was on this program a few months ago, and actually he and Robert Balval both made startling discoveries in that the pyramid at Giza has special portals that are aligned with the star Sirius. Now, that was interesting enough. Robert Balval actually made the original discovery, but William Cruttendon noted that it's always looked at Sirius because our solar system, our sun, is a binary star with Sirius, and we actually revolve around Sirius, and that's why the pyramid has always looked at Sirius. And I guess my question is, why did they think it was so important that we build this edifice that aligns with what is really the star around which our solar system revolves?
Well, that's interesting, because I know, according to my own research, that the ancient Egyptians believed that Osiris originated from Orion, and that Isis resonated with Sirius. And I'll have to look into that. That's fascinating. I didn't know about that, about the crystal. I always assumed that, well, I've read that it was made out of either gold or black onyx, and I read other legends that said it wasn't there, but I like the idea of it being made of crystal as well, so I'm going to have to look into that. Thanks for sharing that.
The book is called The Lost Star.
Gotcha.
The Lost Star by William Cruttendon. It's a pretty good book, and there's a couple of references in there about this origin of the Hebrew language. It's really interesting.
Beautiful. Okay, just so I can get back on track here so I don't lose my train of thought here. The last element that I was going to get into was androgyny and how that's portrayed within the pyramid.
Right.
Well, again, that's easy, you know. The easiest way to see that is just in terms of the present. Although it hasn't always been named that, we have now as the king's and queen's chambers. Which is also interesting, you know, because esoterically speaking, if you take the words king and the word queen, and you analyze those two names in terms of Chaldean Hebrew numerology, which is actually one of the most oldest systems of numerology around. The word king comes up to 11, and the word queen comes up to the number 22, which are both considered master numbers in any form of numerology. And, of course, when you blend together a king and a queen, and unite them, and you get a prince or a princess, basically, you know, and you could also equate that with Christ in some way. And I have to state here that I'm not a religious man. When I talk about Christ or anything like that, I usually do it from an intellectual perspective, because I'm one of those guys that I have a healthy skeptical mind, you know, but the more I've researched into it and the more I've looked into it and my own dream times and teachings, what I've gleaned from all this is that the concept of Christ is not foreign to the pyramid itself, and it predates even Jesus. Because I consider Jesus and Christ to be two different things. I think Christ is almost like a title. You become that, whereas Jesus was a man that also became that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would argue with that. And you know, the difference between religious and spiritual is that religious people are afraid of going to hell, and spiritual people have already been there. One thing I noted, as you were talking about that, the king's and queen's chamber... Mm-hmm. is inside the pyramid, and the pyramid's a single shape. So that means that king and queen is inside each one of us.
Yeah, basically. And you look at the old oriental symbol of yin and yang, you know. One symbol, two genders, or two opposites. Each one containing a little bit of what the other one has.
Exactly right.
You know, and so it's a universal concept. I think it speaks to a lot of cultures, not only the pyramid, but the concepts within the pyramid, that other cultures have had a window into this and expressed it in their own best fashion available. And
gotcha.
A lot of people might have issue with humanity being androgynous or hermaphroditic or whatever you want to call it. But let's face it, I mean, speaking strictly from a male perspective, I've often wished... that I was able to... There's something about women. There's something about the female psyche that trumps male logic a lot of times. They're able to... You know, when you're walking around with your girlfriend and or your wife, and she says to you, there's something I don't like about this situation. And you go, whatever. You know, you do it, and you get burned half an hour later, and your wife says, I told you so. You should have listened to me. And you hear about it like half a day after, you know?
Uh-huh.
But dang it.
Don't have to wait that long.
Three quarters of the time.
Speaking of waiting, let's take a quick break. This is our second hour of X Squared Radio. We'll be right back after this little musical interlude with more of Stefan Wutuni. Please don't go away. This is the third hour, the hour everyone waits for. We're going to go to some levels that you haven't been before. We'll be right back after this. Don't go away. Squared Radio. We're glad you're here with us. Our AccuWeather window forecast here in western Kentucky is 80 degrees and dark right now. Okay, we told you we would tell you more about electric pickup trucks. How does $25,000 sound without needing to buy another drop of gasoline for your farm truck? Just go to greenstarusa.com to learn more, or you can go directly to the website ggci-us.com, ggci-us.com, Global Green Cars. Of course, as the plant gets completed, we'll make sure you are the first in line to get one for yourself. Global Green Cars is reemerging as the leader in electric vehicles. They once were in the mid-90s. They hold the world speed record for Pike's Peak Hill Climb in a production electric car and the longest distance on a single charge, over 1,000 miles. They broke the record in 1995, and it still stands. No one's even close. The time is now, and you are ready to go green with Global Green Cars. And if you're going to get out in the sun and water this year, do it in style with the perfect wetsuit at Wetsuit Warehouse. Check it out at xsquaredradio.com. No sense getting burned and having to keep yourself afloat out there in the ocean. The best wetsuits and the best looking wetsuits are out there right now, all kinds of swimwear. And don't forget, June 19th through June 21st, the H2O live concert. It's everywhere. 26 different cities all around the world. We listed them earlier in the program. If you missed it, just go back and listen to the archive, Hour 1. We gave you a good description of that. Or you can click on the H2O live concert link at xsquaredradio.com and learn all about it. The musicians will be tuning their instruments to 528 hertz, the frequency of love, in a global attempt to heal the planet's water. 26 different cities, there is one near you, no matter what continents you live on. Check it out by clicking on the H2O live concert banner at xsquaredradio.com. And we'll be back right after this with more X Squared Radio. Don't go away. More Stefan Wutuni coming to you.
The spice expands life. The spice expands consciousness.
Just had a check-in from Denny and Brinkley, who was scheduled to come on in the first hour. Unfortunately, an event happened, an emergency that required his attention, he and his wife. Catherine, and they went to see to it, so they are definitely excused and invited on another night. So he did call and let us know there was a problem, and they took care of it. Don't want to go into it because it's kind of that kind of emergency, but just want to let you know that it's out there. Stefan Wutuni is my guest. His website, let's see, was it pyramiddreamers.net, right?
Dreamingthepyramid.net.
Dreamingpyramid.net. Geez, see, my dyslexia kicked in again. It's a good thing I'm a talk radio host, huh? We had just gone through the eight aspects that aligns the purpose of the pyramid with the human body. And some amazing cross discoveries there, because one of the things that we realize we get to the culmination of Stefan's research is that the pyramid itself is an androgynous representation of the human being. And what I mean by that is not the fact that you're a man or a woman. I mean the being that's inside of you, the one that looks back at you in the mirror each morning or each evening as you take a look at yourself. I venture to say it's not the person that you expected to see. The being that's inside of you, Stefan, I would say, is far more animated and beautiful and leaping and flying than the one that looks at you in the mirror in the morning. But
unfortunately, you're right.
That's the force that's inside of us. That's what drives us. And maybe, you know, that's the secret of the pyramid as well. It's not just a four-sided, you know, four triangle building laying in the middle of the sand. There are secrets there that can reveal things about us that we need to know, especially at this time. And what we broached in our first hour together, you and I, is that maybe we left messages for ourselves in the sand such that the forces of wind and nature could not degrade it, kind of like a time capsule that would last above the ground, so we wouldn't help but see it at the right time. But now we're finally discovering, you know, what the heck the darn thing is for, and it's awakening things inside of us. So in this hour, let's see if we can go a little deeper into that aspect. So how do you think we knew that we would need these things at this time in our development?
We had foresight. Our perspective as energy-based beings perhaps was far better than the vision that we have today of ourselves and of the world in general. We probably had a greater understanding of various ecosystems and the way they're intertwined and interconnected and interdependent upon one another. And in terms of time, we were probably able to foresee and predict how... If it is true that we became lost in this illusion called reality and that we're trying to step out of it and re-become in tune with that reality on the other side in another dimension, we probably had the ability to predict the point of time at which we would cease that addiction and start to look at ourselves from another vantage point, which is what pretty much the world is doing collectively right now. We're starting to, we have started to look at ourselves as different type beings rather than just animals. You know, we're becoming our own creators. I mean, already the Genome Project has mapped out the entire gene pool. So we need to look at the greater understandings and implications of that. Like, why would we be doing that unless there is something vastly more important and special than what we've known all along? We're more than animals. We're animal-like at our worst, but at our best, we're gods.
Yeah, I believe that, sure. I believe that very thing. And, you know, it is set in stone. It is sitting in the middle of, you know, protected dry area. So I guess when we're ready, it's there.
Yeah, you know, and that's going to be changing a lot in the future, too, because from what I've read, the entire Giza Plateau is slated to undergo a vast security upgrade in the next few months or years. They're talking motion sensor cameras, perimeter fencing, just a really highly developed groundwork of surveillance surrounding the entire Giza structures, which is probably understandable considering how much tourism goes into there, and that is their flagship. I mean, when people go to Egypt, they go to see the pyramids. That's what comes up in everybody's mind.
Well, that's the only natural resource they have, but I don't see as anybody's trying to steal it, although maybe someone might try to blow it up, but I don't know if you've ever been there. It's not an easy place to get into. It's, and of course, once you're there, you can kind of wander around as you want to. But it's you know, getting around Egypt is not what people think it is. You have to have you know, quasi-military approval to go anywhere, and you have to go with a caravan. There's no just taking off to Abydos on your own.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, you have to go through checkpoints, and the bus drivers have to give a manifest of everyone who's on the bus. It has their passport number, and if you're on an alert list or something, they'll pull you off the bus. So there's no just renting a car and driving around Egypt.
This makes those stories told by Ken Klein that much more entertaining, like how he had to sneak into Egypt to film inside the Great Pyramid and pull off his movie. I give the man credit.
Well, I've taken pictures inside of it, and I have several rolls of film, so it's not that hard a thing to do. You just have to have the right travel agent. But maybe in his day, you know, he had trouble getting in there. But lots of documentaries are being shot. I guess the most wild thing that I've seen is that Zawi Hawass is trying to franchise the pyramid so that anybody who shows an image of the pyramid publicly has to pay them a royalty. That's the one most outrageous thing that I've heard of lately.
Well, if any well-connected ears are listening to this right now, you have to prevent that from happening. I implore you, because the pyramid is a universal symbol and it cannot be held by one nation or civilization. It belongs to no one.
Especially one that didn't build it. You know, they inherited it. It just happens to be on real estate.
You know, you have 177 pyramids in, or 118 pyramids in Egypt, and however many in Mexico, and they just found one off the coast of Japan, I think, in the waters, and one possibly in Bosnia, one in China. Several reputed ones on Mars, and who knows where else. You know, it's a universal symbol. Let's keep it free. It's one of the few things that you don't need a license to buy or look at these days. So,
I keep waiting for the one manned mission to Mars where we can actually walk up to the face on Mars and see if it's actually a pyramid or just a hill with interesting lighting angles.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. By the way, Brooks, there is one element that I forgot to mention earlier. And it's the 13th perfect sign. The 13th perfect sign on the pyramid is symbolized by, well, on my side anyway, it's symbolized by the capstone at the top. And when you look at the relationship between Jesus and his disciples, you have 12 disciples and one guy in the center, which is pretty much what the capstone is to the pyramid. You have 12 signs surrounding the pyramid and the capstone on top, which reputedly
contains... I'm kind of losing the signal on your phone there. Are you using a wireless phone? I think you're losing a little bit of battery power there.
Okay, how's this?
Well, it's a little
better.
We'll try to wing it. We've got about 45 minutes left. I'll just turn your volume up a little bit, but I think it maybe I don't know if my producer can do anything about it if he's listening, but Stefan's volume has dropped significantly, and we were balanced there, and now we're not.
Brooks, I hope you don't have any outside help tonight.
Ah, there we go.
Okay.
All right.
So basically, if you look at modern masonry, and you look at, if you go into skyscrapers in any downtown core of practically any Western industrialized nation, on a lot of the older buildings, they usually lack the 13th floor. You go from the 12th floor to the 14th floor.
Right.
So my feeling regarding that is that people with extreme Masonic abilities designed and built the pyramid for sure. Now, whether or not Masons were present back then, I kind of doubt it. But for sure, they probably inherited a lot of the teachings from that and formed, this is conspiracy talk, but they probably formed their secret societies based upon those teachings to hold them for future generations, and probably some of them decided to keep them for themselves. So the way when we see modern architecture like that, I think it's just a carryover from those times and how they've decided to put Christ's relationship with the disciples in terms of in masonry, and, you know, in the missing 13th floor. But it's not missing. It's just like the 13th sign itself. Once we become the perfect astrological sign, in other words, when we become fully in touch with spirit or wherever source that we're from, there's no need to... The limitations of our personality here on Earth become meaningless because we become at one with everything. So you're able to to mentally unite with other people around you that might previously have conflicted with you in terms of astrological natures. For instance, if a person is a Taurus, and they Tauruses tend to be rather practical, tend to be rather material and very traditional. Well, that's a squared off relationship with a person like Scorpio, who tends to be mysterious, mystical, secretive, and just as practical, but you know, more concerned with the spiritual side of things or the non-physical side of things. But once you unite with spirit, if spirit is in touch with all 12 of those signs, and you become all 12 of the signs in one, then those limitations no longer matter. You become at one with everything and everyone around you. And I think Christ, in every incarnation that he, she, or it came in on the earth, probably came to teach that same teaching. You know, that by uniting all the zodiac within yourself and simply uniting with spirit, your inner true self, none of those things apply to you anymore because you become at one with everything.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I see some similarities between the zodiac and the behavior, or at least overall personality qualities of a person. Although I have a tendency to look at some gestations, like let's say a person is supposed to be born, if they stay in the womb their whole 9 months, they're supposed to be born in July. But they're actually born premature, and so they're born in the latter part of May. They're supposed to have the qualities of a Leo, but they end up being born under the sign of Gemini. So is it the birth time, the time that you begin breathing air, or is it the gestation time, or the, shall we call it, the insemination time that is the key time that ties into the personality of the person?
Well, professional astrologers generally calculate the astrological chart based upon when you draw your first breath, right at birth. That's what they go by. They note that, and that's what they chart all of your houses and your charts based on that. When you take in your first breath, that's when they chart it on. So probably, yeah, your first answer.
I would say that there's also a star genetics as well to the person, because the body is actually, you know, made up of two parts. There's the animated being that's on the inside, and there's the calcium and water and iron and protein that makes up the body on the outside. It's a combination of the two. So if you bring that star inheritance with you and you combine it with the zodiacal condition of the water body that you're dwelling in at the time in the earth, then you get the combination of the two, and maybe that's where the variety inside the zodiac comes from.
It's possible. That's a good observation. I haven't thought about it like that before. What you've also opened up the door to, Brooks, is and this is really interesting. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of Michael Glickman, but he's quite a known personality in the whole crop circle movement. An older fellow. An architecture, I think. And his fascination in terms of the crop circle and his discussions have always tended to been with pi. And what he likened pi with was that when you're squaring the circle, the square representing the material and the circle representing heaven, that what you're trying to do essentially is you're trying to bring the earth closer to heaven, or bring the heaven closer to you, making one like the other. And in terms of the struggle between our physical and spiritual existence, that's pretty much always been what we've gone through as a species as well. You have the material side of human nature, the one that lusts, the one that fights, the one that that has greed and all that. And you're trying to, well, ideally anyway, throughout a person's lifetime, that person tries to better themselves by lessening those qualities and emphasizing the more positive ones. So essentially you're pieing yourself, so to speak. You're squaring your own circle of your own soul, which is an impossible task, we know, because mathematically speaking, you can never really fully define the circle with pi, because it's a transcendental number. It never ends. Never has no origin. It has no end. So how do you do that? So it's an ideal to strive for as well. And I think that's part of the great journey of this Earth and universe as well, is that however much we evolve from this point forward, even if we manage to completely turn ourselves around, completely transform this earth into a gorgeous, gorgeous paradise where no negativity exists, we're probably going to realize that we still have quite a long ways ahead of us in terms of possibility and expansion upon what we've already gone through. Maybe we can help others on other worlds as well, which I find fascinating. You know, I mean, if
star people are coming here,
then wow, the idea that we might actually go there and help them as well or others just seems fascinating to me. Probably premature, but I mean, if it's what we're meant to do, then what a fantastic journey we're on.
Well, it kind of opens up the idea that if we are being visited by other worlds, or even from inside our own world, the reason we're being visited is because, A, we're could be an interesting race, although I don't want to be so arrogant as that, but certainly we are a unique planet. In all directions, there's nothing like her. And if we are nearing this point of evolutionary change, as you say, and we are at the precipice, so to speak, where we have a choice between walking off the cliff or becoming this higher race or bringing this planet to a higher form of existence, then maybe that in and of itself is interesting to races from other worlds, and that's why they're here, because they want to be here at the time of that historic change, and maybe even some of them want to make sure it doesn't go wrong. So they're working behind the scenes, making sure that we're aware of those things we should be doing.
Yeah, yeah, I like that too, because it puts them in I think, in, if I can be really arrogant to say so, I think it puts it all in the correct perspective that...
Stefan, I think it's your phone. If it's a cord, I think what's happening is you're wiggling the cord, and I'm kind of losing your signal. You're going to about one quarter of your volume, but that's okay. I mean, you're clear. It's just that you're quiet. My question now at this point is, you think that the Earth is about to make a change as well, beside the human beings upon it, right?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And it also puts the idea that any visiting civilizations coming here might do so as more like observers than participants, although they might kick in at some point and help out when it's most needed, which I think is probably what an older sibling does to its younger sibling as well. Like if you have a younger brother or younger sister and they're having a rough time, you help them out, but you also let them help themselves out as well. You don't automatically save them, you know. If you save them just like that, you don't offer them any growth.
That takes a lot of restraint, because you know, as an older brother, you kind of want, okay, just give that here, just give it here, let me do it.
Exactly. I mean, how patient and how compassionate, because you can look at it in both ways. People often say that aliens are evil because you know all this stuff is going on and they're abducting us and probing us and forcing us to do ungodly things. But at the other end, you could say also that they're extremely compassionate because they're letting us evolve and grow without direct interference, or only when it's needed, at a pace that we can allow, at a pace that we can grow with without having them come down and save us. You know,
I really think
that we hold our own salvation when we come right down to it, and our finest hour is yet to come as a species. We're not lost. We're just having our metal tested.
I kind of hope that they would step in and say, you know, okay, it's better to step in now than to say, oh, gee, there you go, another nuclear explosion. Now, I told you about that.
Yeah. Well, apparently, according to several whistleblowers, although several nuclear tests have gone off, there's also been a tremendous amount of off-world originated airstrikes on launched ICBMs that have fallen flat on the ground, that went nowhere, and all the ordnance inside was cleaned right out, no radiation left. That, of course, was on the latest Larry King episodes. But I think, like you said, you know, they probably will kick in when it's needed, hopefully, and I hope so. I really hope that. Here's Brooks. Here's where I stand on that. I hope they do, simply because I view them as family, and I'm looking forward to seeing family, basically.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with that. You know, it's kind of like heavier than air flight. You know, we stood on the ground and we watched birds and we drew them and we jumped off buildings and we did all kinds of crazy things. But once we saw someone fly, we said, oh, that's how it's done. And now we fly around the world. We just need to be shown, you know, how do we do this without burning petroleum fuel? Once somebody does it, it's like, oh, that's how it's done. And then if we're intelligent about it, we can walk away from this petroleum-based transportation that we have, and we can pick up something electric that we can afford and use it instead. We can change. We can move away from burning fossil fuels for transportation.
Exactly. And also what it does is also that a lot of people say that, well, these energies should not be brought out to the public because it would create an even ground for the entire world to become prosperous and overpopulation would result. But demographics studies show that the richer and more prosperous nations become, the less children they have. They tend to put more of their effort and more into their energy into just fun and leisure instead. You know,
well,
third and second world countries, a lot of people have kids just so they can help them survive. Like they force them to become beggars and so on. Whereas a lot of the richer people tend to have lesser numbers of kids, and some don't even have them at all.
Well, that's true. It can go both ways. You can say that they become wealthy because they have less children and they live within their means. On the other hand, you can say that once you educate them and give them the wealth, that is to say, a clean glass of water when they want it and something to eat whenever they want it, that they won't try to have 11 children so that two survive and make us watch the nine die on national television so we feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point, too. Also, with the rate that we're evolving at right now, not only physically but also in terms of consciousness, if those floodgates were to open up in terms of energies and all the things that it entails, our consciousness would probably evolve where... I mean, let's face it, a lot of people have said... Well, I forget where I heard this, but I read somewhere that... if you took everybody on planet Earth and reduced them into one area, that it would fill up one area the size of Texas, and that there would be enough resources on the Earth, and then some, to feed everyone. You know, so really what we're talking about is distribution of resources, and it's like a lake, you know. 10% of the lake contains 90% of the fish, and the same thing with wealth. But, I mean, there's almost as much agony being wealthy, extremely wealthy, as it is being poor. I know this from fact simply because I've met so many rich people, filthy rich people in the past, that they don't even know who their friends are. You know, because everybody that befriends them, they don't know if they really want something from them, if they're friends with them because they have something that they enjoy them for their actual presence, or they're just wanting something from them. Now, I'm not saying that they should liberate their money, but I'm just saying that if the grip becomes lessened and the energies and the technologies and that become shared, everybody wins.
Yes, that's true. And I can say that the rich, the wealthy, have rich and wealthy friends just for that reason, because they know they don't want anything from them, so they can golf on their own dollar Dutch all the time if they want to. And the other idea is that this energy, if it was released to the world, which it is going to be, I can tell you within 5 years, mass production of electric cars is going to happen in the United States. I know this for a fact because I'm involved in the industry.
cool.
Will it happen to the detriment of the petroleum industry? Absolutely not. There is so much use for oil beside fuel that is so much higher profit than gasoline or diesel fuel. The petroleum industry would be overjoyed if we transferred cars to electricity. It only creates...
That is not often talked about, but I agree with that.
I can tell you, they'll be overjoyed. It's such a pain in the hind end for them to build a new refinery. They would much rather retool the existing refineries to make high-profit chemicals such as toluene and different kinds of polymer and stuff like that out of the oil, which they make $1.70, $1.80 per gallon, whereas for diesel fuel, they wholesale it out at about 90 cents a gallon. They don't make a penny off of it, really. I mean, the volume of it, 35 billion gallons a year, is certainly attractive to them. But can you imagine if they didn't have to buy foreign oil, if they only had to use domestic oil, at the price of oil today, $51, do you know how much money they would be making off domestic oil? They would be making huge profits off of it because they wouldn't have to buy foreign oil at $51 a barrel.
Well, basically what it comes down to is redirecting energy towards, it's not really destroying existing infrastructures, is what you're saying. It's just retooling, refining, and redirecting our energy, so to speak, to make them profitable in different areas, you know. And right now, there is so much oil in production. I grew up in Alberta, right in the Alberta tar sands and south of there.
Absolutely. The heart of Canadian oil.
Yep. But it's like eating sunflower seeds, you know. You expend so much energy for what you get out of it. And the end result becomes, well, right now, northern Alberta, much of northern Alberta looks like the moon. When I was there last 2 years ago, I mean, you almost feel like Neil Armstrong walking on in some parts of northern Alberta. Everything is just
dead.
It's nuts, you know. So there's obviously a redirection of energy and focus that we need to go through. And I don't think that the release of these alternative energies will spell the end of the petroleum industry, as you're saying. And that's a really good point that you raised, because all we just need to do is just redirect it and then refocus our,
Well, there's a lot more to it than that, because, you know, it's going to take billions of dollars to get an industry like that up and started. And unfortunately, all of these new energies are also new companies, and they don't have money. So they need investors or they need governmental help. And I can tell you the only way that alternative energies are going to come to full production is if government takes a serious, I mean serious, look at pouring money into it. And I'm talking about the same kind of money they put into national defense. This recent solicitation that they came out with, $378 million for electric vehicles, is a joke. An absolute joke.
Yeah, it's not much of anything at all.
General Motors spends that much on payroll in a week.
Yep.
They need to take some serious multi-billion dollar looks at getting electric vehicles into full production in the next 36 months.
Well, Brooks, there's only two things that I can see that will create that need. One is a worsening international crisis. The other one is ET's showing up. Like, I mean, not to go through that whole Blossom Goodchild thing again, but I mean, if something of magnitude happens where ships or a ship appears around the world and is televised, something of magnitude needs to occur to make us jump through that final hoop to push us to evolve. And it's either a worsening crisis, I think, which could very well do the job. Now this whole, I don't know what they call it in English, but over here they call it the grippe porcine, which means the swine-based or the pig-based flu or whatever they're calling it now.
And, oh, right. Yeah.
They're calling it the new pandemic now.
So, right. It's broken out in Mexico, in Spain, in Canada, in the Middle East, and it's knocking people out pretty badly. I know the last really bad swine flu that swept this country was, of course, about 100 years ago, but it killed as many as 50% of some cities. It was quite devastating. Well, we've got about 25 minutes. I want to talk about a term that you brought up in the first hour you were on. It's the term re-become. Let's explore that. What does it mean in a nutshell, re-become?
Let's view the entire Earth as an experiment that we decided to co-create because we wanted to expand upon our powers. And let's look upon that journey as one that we willingly took, perhaps not even knowing what the consequences might be. I mean, if we stepped into this realm and became addicted to it and are now starting to remember our identities as the handlers and as the manipulators of this realm in other dimensions, then re-becoming who we once were will perhaps not finalize that journey, but it'll complete one step in our universal journey. Like, who knows what'll happen after this? But what it's also going to do, I think, as we re-become as we re-become the gods that we once were, as we remember our divinity, it's going to force us to reconsider our responsibilities not only towards each other and towards ourselves, but also towards the natural world. Right now, there are lots and lots of people that are totally against any sort of genetic studies concerning other animals. They say that we're playing God, that we shouldn't be doing this, and so forth. But let me tell you something, you know, and you might be thinking along these lines as well, that those studies that we're doing right now probably dwarfs, I mean, what we originally had probably dwarfs what we have now in terms of knowledge. You know, we're just tapping the bare tip of it. We're not even scratching it. I think that we were probably much, much more powerful in the beginning, and that some of those abilities are starting to come back. And so our journey together is going to be learning how to become accountable and responsible and mature with those abilities and make sure that they don't become used for, you know, in brackets, evil purposes. And it's a scary journey, but it's also a fascinating one, and I'm in love with the whole aspect of it. But I have faith, you know, despite all the doom and gloom that the media, God bless their souls, they're doing their best, but also they're falling victims to their own mentalities a lot of ways, or whoever dictates the spin and the stories that they have to share. So I have a lot of hope, but we're slowly re-becoming gods, and the process of re-becoming that and remembering it is a scary one, but it's also essential. We need to go through it. Because who knows? Maybe we'll create other worlds from here on, you know, and maybe we'll have greater memory, and we won't fall into the same pitfalls that we've taken so long ago.
Well, if we have made attempts at re-becoming before and we didn't make it, we nuked each other out of existence, or the Earth went through cataclysm and frustrated our efforts, at least it looks as though now the Earth is ready for us. And I guess my opinion is we're ready for us. Sure, there are factions of the world that are locked in fear and are to be warlike, you know, all their live long day. But I also think that the youth that's coming to the earth now, and even the 50 and 60 year olds that are out there, I've spoken to thousands of them, they've got this idea that something wonderful is about to happen, and they want to be involved. They want to participate in it. And just the energy of their wanting to participate in it is going to help it happen, don't you think?
Absolutely. Let's look at the entire, the Mayan cycle, for instance, is, I think it's just over 25,000 years, pretty much the length of time that it takes for our planet to go through the, or our solar system, I should say, to go through the entire precession of the equinoxes. That journey right there represents a giant birthday for us. And I think a lot of people are subconsciously or unconsciously looking forward to that event. You know, it's a milestone in our evolution. And it's also a milestone in the planet's evolution. If the planet itself is a living being, then he or she or it is going through their own manure right now, and we're involved in it as well.
Right.
You know, that we might be microcosms living within the earthly macrocosm and the universal macrocosm, and it's going through its ordeals and its trials, and we're merely feeling the end result or the fringe result of all that interaction. Beautiful, beautiful things for us ahead. So Brooks, I'm not sure what your listenership base is like. Do you have people from high-level government listening in on your show?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I have had a few interviews where I've walked in and they said, "Are you the Brooks Agnew?" I said, "What? Are you the host of X Squared Radio?" Yeah. I didn't get that contract. But, yeah, I mean, we have listeners all over the world. But I don't think government listens, because we don't do conspiracy theories here. We don't do ghosts. We talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth mostly. And occasionally, maybe once a month, we talk about new energy. And we talk about new inventions and new technologies that are coming out. But there are enough shows that do that all the time. We just involved in a couple of companies that are doing it, so we run commercials for them.
Well, I was just going to say that if there were people like that listening to your show, that that I encourage them to take heart and have faith in the human race if they're involved with any aspect of our evolving worldwide from here on. You know, there's a lot of good things to the human race that are just coming to pass. And I think we can really, really have a great time ahead if we just pull together.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we have great potential as a human race. We have immense capacity to love and to create, and we have, of course, the ability to communicate and to travel and to treasure one another's artworks and music. And, you know, this event that's happening this summer, this H2O Live concert, is very typical of the international events that can be done together. One coordinated sound, one coordinated voice, and that kind of energy all happening at the same time in synergy has very powerful effects on the consciousness of the Earth, not only the race, but the planet itself. I mean, you know, I know it sounds kind of arrogant, but if it's true, then wouldn't that explain why, you know, for instance, the pyramids were left for us at this time so that we could draw together as one race and look at least one icon that puts us in such a state of awe that we realize how eternal we are as a race and how important it is to save it.
Yes, and regardless of the perspective that we look upon that structure. And this is part of the problem in terms of our evolving spiritually and physically, in that as power and as knowledge progresses and is attained and kept by people, it becomes very easy to try to lord it over people and control them.
Oh, sure.
And the challenge, and the challenge in there is to try to not keep that knowledge, but to share it and keep it circulating, keep it moving. Because once you keep something, it dies. You need to keep it circulating and keep it moving. Like energy, like money. Money does the same thing. You know, so it's a great temptation to try to keep that power and try knowledge, but boy, if you can share it and elevate another person, and make their day, boy, it just comes back to you threefold, you know.
Yeah, it's a little like, you know, packing a can of corn around with you in your pocket, thinking that you're going to get nutrition from it.
You got to blend it with all the other stuff.
No, you got to open the can and eat it. You can't just hoard it away. You know, that's what I think, you know, it's apparent that governments are trying to do. If they really do have UFO artifacts or proof that other worlds have visited us, it doesn't do them any good whatsoever. They should disclose it to the people.
You know, Brooks, a lot of people have said that that disclosure will never happen because people aren't ready and too much energy and money has been spent in black secret projects and it'll never happen. But here's the thing. And they say also that people aren't ready. Well, let's put this in perspective. Were native people ready for the first colonizers when they came in from Europe? No. And yet here we are living as one nation. I'm Native American, and I live amongst other people of different nations. And you know what? I'm a pretty happy guy, you know, even though my ancestors were on this land originally. And I have no problem with that. So let's extend. And also the people from the different sides of the oceans, they didn't even know that each other existed until they met. So let's extend that same ignorance back then and apply it to the heavens. We're not sure or not, collectively speaking, as a whole, that they exist. But if they exist, they for sure know that we exist. They just have that much better perspective. So, considering also the idea that we're not ready, well, no civilization on the receiving end has ever been ready. So now is as better a time as ever to disclose. But also, you know, you might as well do it. Why not? Get it over with. Get it done. It's like losing your virginity. Just step in and do it.
Well, I know several decades ago, the Brookings Institution released a study that if UFOs were endorsed by the federal government to the general populace, that there would be a social breakdown, absolute social panic. I absolutely, very objectively believe that would not happen today.
Yeah, exactly. And also to the Brookings Institute, I mean, I've lost my thread here. I'm not sure what I wanted to say with that.
Well, you know, there's this official line that, you know, UFOs don't exist. There's no evidence, regardless of what lights you've seen in the sky, with your visible or with your infrared or with your movie cameras. It's all just a trick of the eye. There's no such thing. And regardless of what, you know, movie producers have been able to make as real and as common as chewing gum, the most popular sci-fi out there, it's not real. It's just a fabrication of Hollywood. There's no such thing. I have to say, though, that, you know, the artists of old, even cavemen, even the medieval art, you see expressions and images of off-world craft, even especially when they're associated with ancient sites such as Chichen Itza or the pyramids, or, you know, the triangle, what did they call it, the Bermuda Triangle.
Bermuda Triangle, yeah.
And many people teach that we once communicated through pictures and through telepathy. And, you know, the words get in the way, so to speak. So, I mean, millions of people speak English, but very few have actually mastered the language. This ancient art is a sort of universal language of telepathy. So they're trying to leave messages in architecture and in art for us, so that we will get it, that we are not alone, and we need to start thinking like that.
Like an older sibling. We're being looked after, basically, I think. And a lot of people kind of poo-poo the idea of the benevolent aliens and all sort of thing, but it takes a lot of energy to be evil. Brooks, I mean, to do destructive things is not very energy efficient.
Well, it is self-destructive, and it comes with its own karma. And keep in mind, there are a lot of technologies that won't function without higher levels of energy, of consciousness. They just won't function. You won't get anywhere.
I've heard that. I've heard that in reports to things that Bob Lazar discussed when he came out of S4. And other people as well that I've read. And I tend to resonate with that, you know, because as the technology progresses and we slowly realize that we are that tech, we'll have much in common with that, which also lends me to the idea that the crafts that we see might be sentient beings themselves, you know, rather than just craft that contain people inside.
Right.
Maybe they have an intelligence themselves. I mean, we practically have that with our cars today. They're becoming, they have computer chips inside, and they're slowly becoming AI.
Well, they are. I mean, Volvo is coming out with a vehicle now that will avoid a front-on collision. It will apply the brakes if it senses you're getting too close to something in front. It won't let you rear end another vehicle. You know, that being said, you've made the statement that we have, you know, the godhood inside of us. Are you saying that, you know, somehow we're embryos or larva of what God is?
Whew. Hopefully we're a little older than children. I'd like to think of us almost as a teenager state, flexing our muscles, sometimes doing damage to our immediate surroundings, but with a lot of good potential. And I think we're at the threshold of becoming young adults.
You think we come from God?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is that In the culture that I'm born in, we don't have a word for God. Literally translated, Gichi Manitou means great mystery.
Okay.
And although we acknowledge that there's something, we don't know exactly what it is. But we acknowledge that we come from it and that it resides within us.
I dare say most religions are like that too. And the ones that are arrogant enough to name it and say you will bow down before it don't really understand what God is.
Well, yeah, like when you apply hard rationality and towards something like that, and you try to control it and bottle it and sell it or force it down other people's throats, it does lose a bit of its essence and its power, you know, and to the point where the other people generations down don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. And young people today, in a lot of Western nations, they don't want to have anything to do with the church, you know, depending on where you are. But I mean, I know here in Quebec, atheism is almost a religion itself. You know,
well, I have found that even I've investigated atheism or agnosticism, and I found it's not that they don't believe in some higher power. It's that they don't believe that there's some guy in the universe saying, you go to heaven, you go to hell, you go to heaven, you go to hell. There's not one person that is the creator, one all-powerful, single force sitting on a throne. But
gosh, I hope not.
Rather, it's us. We are Source. You know, we are the ones that judge ourselves by our own thoughts, by our own actions, and we do so instantly. When we participate in something dark and devious, we become dark and devious. When we have, you know, bright and cheerful, merciful thoughts toward others, pure love, we become pure love and mercy.
I like that. I like that a lot. And it also reflects that old Latin saying, you know, to nosce ipsum, or nosce te ipsum, as they say, know thyself. We're looking from without the answers that we already have within. That's the ultimate cliche, but I mean, it's so true. Even The Matrix, you know, said it, and a lot of other movies as well. So I don't know how much time we have left, but I'd really like to thank you for having me on a show like this. I always enjoy sharing my ideas and having lively discussions like this with people. And,
well, we have about
you made my day. You made my day, Brooks.
Well, you've made mine. Because this program is all about being positive and all about exploring the mysteries of the universe and the earth. And, you know, we realize that the whole universe is folded up inside of us. But still, when somebody awakens like yourself and you get this unique perspective, you get these downloads and messages and you understand, even from an artist's point of view, especially from an artist's point of view, we get a unique flavor. We get a color and a texture from you and your thoughts that are now recorded. And people will be listening to it for years and understand what Stefan Wutuni really wanted to say all along.
That's comforting. I've dedicated about 15 years of this, so it's, you know, at one point I was really unsure if I would even put the information out there. I kept quiet about it for about probably 7 or 8 years, and just last year I decided to put it out, made the website, and release it. And there was some hesitation because I'd received some opposition from certain individuals that showed up at my doorstep and said that I shouldn't share this information. And at the point in time where the website was just about to go live, I had made sure about 5 days before that I had sent out 125 of my DVDs containing all of my materials, the website itself, the free ebook, the video, and I sent it out to some really, really powerful groups and individuals throughout the world, you know. So I just wanted to make sure that that base was spread out. But I've come to see that that wasn't necessary, because the struggle that we're in right now is a collective one, and whether we're working for each other or not, or with each other or against each other, we're all in it together in the same struggle, and we think that we're doing the right thing. So I'd like to think that in that orchestra, instruments that were unable to find the perfect notes and tones with each other can straighten themselves out and work in tune, you know. So I look forward to anything other people come up with and can refine and tear apart in terms of my ideas and rebuild them. And see what sticks. You know, the worst thing that I could do with this information is hold it as gospel for myself. I don't want to do that. I want to keep it alive and keep it changing. And if other people contribute ideas for me that I can change and incorporate into my website, and if they can do so with their works and their creations, so much the better. We all win.
Exactly.
You know, in any area that we're involved in.
I, for one, am glad you decided to come out and play, because the symphony would not be complete without you.
Hey, thanks. You too, Brooks.
All right, my friend, you have a great week, and take care of yourself, and please stay in touch. If you make any more startling discoveries, let us know.
Sounds good. I tend to update the website every 2 weeks or so. the blog is pretty active.
I'll keep checking it out.
Thanks. Have a great night, and I'll have supper.
Thank you. Oh, hey, and tell us one more time what your website is so people can get to you.
DreamingThePyramid.net. And they can download the free ebook and watch the free promotional video and check out the blog.
There you go. Nothing better than free. And
So
get to that website. The link is also at X Squared Radio. So if you go to the X Squared Radio archives, you can click on his link and go right to him. Thanks for coming on the program, my friend.
Thanks, Brooks. Have a great night.
You too. Talk to you later.
Bye.
All right, my friends, that is it for X Squared Radio, April 26, 2009. Next week, we may be able to get Danian back on the program. So don't count us out yet. And we'll be running some excellent archives, especially for you listeners on the Conscious Media Network archives that you have not heard before. We'll upload those and get those ready for you. And please check in often at bbsradio.com. Literally, people, there are over 200 hours of archives there. Interviews just like this and with world authorities all over. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Sunday. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.